This will be saved for posterity now, whoever he is. We save a lot of things for him anyway, don't we? Let's begin our class as we generally do with a prayer. Cecil, would you mind leading us in a prayer as we begin, please?
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this time that you've given us together here this evening, Father, on this Thursday evening. We thank you so much, Father, for each and every one that showed up here this evening. We pray, Father, as we study another portion of our word, Father, that you'll be with us. May we all keep an open mind, Father, as we study and participate. And Father, we just ask these blessings and petitions and give you thanks. In your Son Jesus' name,
amen. Amen. Guys, I appreciate I'm using guys generically there to include the guyettes. I appreciate your being here. I know it's got to be somewhat of a job to work and then come in and get ready and come over to the church building, but I appreciate your dedication and hope the class is being helpful to you as well as the one that's being taught the second hour. We are on page 36 in our notebooks. We're going to talk about discipline. I was in a teacher's workshop last weekend on Friday night and Saturday at Sandyville in West Virginia. It's down back of Richmond if you don't know where Sandyville is. I'd done 7 hours. I'd done 2 hours Friday night and 5 hours on Saturday, and finally came down to the last little bit, and I said, let's just deal with some questions that maybe I didn't get to cover, some material that I didn't get to cover. And a lady in the back raised her hand, and she said, you didn't say anything about discipline, and I've got to know what to do. And she told me a situation she was having in her classroom, and she was kind of up in the air about how she ought to handle it. Every workshop I do, that's a real hot button issue. How do you handle discipline problems? How do you prevent discipline problems? And what I'm going to say in this session probably applies more to the lower classes than it does the adult class, although I have had discipline problems in adult classes. Somebody who just wants to dominate, for instance, or someone who just wants to be argumentative, for instance. But most of what I'll say will apply to directly to those of you who teach classes for children. I believe there are three classes of discipline, and this is crucial to dealing with the issue. When we say discipline, for instance, where does our mind go almost automatically in the process?
Problem people or children.
Okay, problem people. Yeah, to whatever we consider the end result, the end of discipline. Isn't that true even in the church when we talk about church discipline?
Yeah.
When somebody says church discipline, we say equal to
withdrawal,
fellowship. No, it's not. No, it's not. That's the last rite, R-I-T-E, of love for a person who is walking disorderly. It's the last thing. There are things that are involved in discipline way up to that point. That's the last thing you do. And I think that a lot of churches really make a mistake in that they don't do the first part and they rush to do the last part. It's not any mistake, by the way, that the word discipline and the word disciple are so very similar, because disciplining is discipling. In our homes, somebody observed already, we think of whatever we consider the worst type of punishment to be. In my case, it was getting spanking. Now, that was the way my dad finally ended up with discipline. When everything else had failed, it was bend over. Okay, now it's time out. Ooh, that's scary. Time out. Oh my. I just came along too early. I missed all the good stuff. What I want us to understand in regard to discipline in the classroom, that remedial is the very last part. There are things we do before we get there. If we do the things right, correctly, we may very well not get to the remedial part of discipline. Constructive discipline. Let's talk about that. Constructive discipline is the control that comes from a well-planned teaching learning situation. Isn't that what we want, a well-planned teaching learning situation?
Yeah.
I mean, as a matter of fact, that's the only thing that justifies itself as far as classes are concerned, if there is teaching and learning. Otherwise, it's pretty much a waste of time, don't you think? If there's no teaching and learning taking place. What makes a teaching-learning situation well-planned that in itself will handle some potential discipline problems?
Keeping the students involved.
All right, absolutely. Keeping things going along, keeping the students engaged and involved, which means what on the part of the teacher? What does the teacher have to do then? Has to be prepared, has to have a plan. You know, I think there are two extremes in regard to the time that we have in a Bible class. One of them is that we get through a long time before the class bell rings. And what do we have to do? Pad, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Teachers, how do you do that? Not that you ever have to do that. Bad question, you know. But you know somebody who maybe does. How do they pad?
Storytelling.
Stories, okay.
Bible games.
Songs and Bible games, okay. Who wants to sing a song? And as I've said, it's always Father Abraham. or play Bible hangman. Yeah, play some kind of a game. Now, I'm not saying that those are always wrong to do. What I am saying is that demonstrates that somebody didn't prepare to use the time. The other extreme is that you never get through with the lesson, and you're going along and about ready to make the big, most important point of the whole class, and the bell rings. And you say, well, just a minute, I'm not done. Oh, yes, you are. You just may not know it. But when the bell rings in children's classes, what happens?
Out the door they go.
You're tuned out. They're ready to go. Even if you stand at the door and guard it, they're ready to go. They've turned their minds off. Teachers have to go into a classroom with a plan that fills the time, that engages the students, and I think that will help keep down discipline problems. Because if a child does not feel engaged and feels that the class is not moving along and there's nothing to do and you're kind of flying by the seat of your pants and there are lulls, that's when children especially just decide to get into trouble. So a part of handling discipline is in just controlling the class because you have a plan. Does that make sense to you? I think the same thing is pretty true in adult classes even. But unless you have a plan and the students are engaged, you're likely to have some problems. Okay. The second level of discipline is preventative. This is a teacher's action which is aimed at avoiding anticipated infractions of the ground rules. Now this understands something, takes something for granted. What is it that it takes for granted? A presupposition. There are ground rules. And teachers, if you teach classes, I really suggest you have ground rules that are known by the students, that are reinforced at regular intervals by the students. At the school of preaching, we had ground rules. One of those was no eating during class period. Now you say, what's wrong with that? You should have seen some of the picnic spreads that people would come to class. We had long classes. It was nothing to have a three-hour class. And I've seen guys pull out a pound of bologna, a loaf of bread, some mayonnaise, and they make themselves a sandwich while I'm trying to teach. Well, about that time, they spill something. Or one of the guys in the back says, "Hey, make me one of those too." And you've lost control. So we just said, you don't eat in class. You can drink. Please bring a mug with a lid on it so that if you bat it, coffee doesn't go everywhere. But it's all right to do that. That's fine. We'll take a break. If you're hungry and are starving to death, you can get you something in the 15-minute break we'll take in the middle there. But we even had to put that ground rule in effect because of the potential problems that resulted when we didn't have it. What do you think are some reasonable ground rules for classes at church? Now, I suggest that it not be like a military code. Okay, page something, paragraph something, line 27, you know, and this is your 87th point. I think the fewer the better. But what are some reasonable ones? Philip, you were going to say something.
The thing that's happened a time or two in my class is cell phones. You know, so I've got to the point where I can, you
know, all right.
No cell phones.
You're not going to believe this. I had a funeral yesterday. 94-year-old lady. I mean, you'll believe that part, but you won't believe the story as it goes along. So we are in the middle of the funeral, and a lady's cell phone rings. She answers it. Hello? She hands it to her husband. No, the husband answers it. That's the way it was. He answers it, hands it to his wife. In the service. The wife starts talking on the phone in the service. Now, I'm not a violent person, but I wanted to kill her. Absolutely kill her. Finally, one of the daughters of the woman who had died hit her on the leg and she said it about like that. I think it meant, get out of here quick. So she went out in the hall and finished the conversation. I thought, oh my goodness. Do you think that turning off cell phones is a reasonable...
Did you preach your funeral too?
Did I do what?
Did you preach your funeral?
Yeah, I should have. And you know what I should do? Should turn off my cell phone. Yeah. I think that's a reasonable thing. Do you have a slide here in yours? Before services, please turn your cell phones off.
I said, if God wants to speak to you, we won't be calling on your cell phone.
Yeah. So I think that's reasonable, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think are reasonable? I know the age determines some of them. Your preschooler is probably not going to have a cell phone, okay?
No toys.
No what?
No toys.
No toys.
The boys bring cars.
Okay.
And soldiers, and the little girls bring dolls.
Okay.
They want to show them to you, and that's fine. But you know, we tell them they have to put them up.
Okay. All right. Reasonable. What else do you think?
No snacks.
No snacks. Okay.
Candies,
okay.
Such.
Okay. My daughter had a cute one. She called it the two-seat rule. When she taught small classes, she said, your seat in that seat. That was her two-seat rule. And that was until we need to get up, and she worked in things where they would get up and move around and do some things, but it was, you need to stay in your seat. You can't get up and run around. Is that reasonable?
Perhaps raising the hand.
Oh, yeah. Permission. You didn't do it. Caught you. Yes.
Perhaps
raising your hand. I think that's, if you want to speak, raise your hand. If you want to be excused, raise your hand. Keep your hands to yourself. Is that a reasonable one when you're teaching small children? I think
all four.
Yeah.
Corners of the chair.
Yes.
That's a big one with the boys.
Yes, especially when you get up into junior high, senior high, it's lean back, and I've seen bad things happen occasion or two. Some of it was helped a little bit with somebody's foot pushing on that, but I've seen people hit the floor. I think the fewer the better, but some reasonable ground rules. What would be wrong with making a poster and putting those up on the board or up on the wall and occasionally referring to them? See, now let's remember what our ground rules are. Because do you think a first grader or a third grader is going to remember those all the time?
No.
If they're posted, it's going to help. And if you refer to them occasionally, that's going to help. So make sure that you have a few well-planned ground rules. The last time I taught a high school class was at Carnes, and there have been some teachers who were having difficulty with the high school class, as often happens in congregations. And so I went in and I said, okay, first session, I want to know what you expect of me. What do you have a right to expect of me as a teacher? And we made a list. And I said, now you make another list what I have a right to expect of you as students. You make the list. I'm not going to impose a list upon you. And interestingly enough, they came up with really good ideas. They told me they had a right to expect of me that I'd be there on time, that I would have my lesson ready, that I would not demean them in any way, that I would not insult them, make fun of them, that I would listen to them. And they had a nice long list of things they had a right to expect of me, and I said, I accept every one of them. And I said, now what do I have a right to expect of you? And they made their own list. They said I had a right to expect them to be there, to be respectful of what was going on in the classroom, to pay attention. I thought, this is better than a list I'd make, and they're making it. And I said, can I hold you to that? And I taught and had a great class. I enjoyed it immensely. But we got that even in a high school class up front. Here's what we have a right to expect of one another. I'll hold your feet to it. You hold my feet to it. If I cross the line and don't measure up, you let me know. If you cross the line, here they are. We've got them written out. We've got them right here on the desk. We can refer to them at any time. And I think you just have to have ground rules at any level, even in adult classes. Now, I don't suppose that we ought to need to write them out with a magic marker and stick them up on the side of the wall, but what are some reasonable ground rules that we would have in an adult class?
Keep the comments relevant.
Yes, absolutely. Stay on target. As much as possible, stay on target. Okay. Okay, very good. What else?
Some of them the same as the other ones. You know, be on time.
Okay. Okay.
Prepared.
Can you think of other reasonable ground rules?
Well, I don't think it's unreasonable in adult class to ask that your comments be kept within a certain time limit.
Okay.
Because sometimes I've seen where they've rambled on forever, it seemed like.
Okay. I think that's reasonable. Give everybody a right to speak, but nobody monopolizes the class. Okay, that we treat one another with respect. We don't make fun of other people when they ask questions or make comments. And I'm not above. I still, when I teach class, I say, let's just get some things clear here at the very beginning. Here's where we are in this. Now, what can a teacher do? What teacher's actions can help avoid the infractions of those? Once we make them, what can the teacher do to avoid the infractions or help avoid the infractions?
Keep their part of the deal in the struggle.
All right. If you've made a covenant that you're going to do some things, keep your end of the bargain. Okay? Absolutely. What else? Well, in smaller classes, it may mean some seating changes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? If you've got two students who pick at one another, who get into a lot of trouble together, I think we say, you need to sit over here and you sit over there. We do that in a very quiet way without embarrassing them before everybody. But we just say, until you can sit side by side and not pick, you're going to have some seats between you. What else can you do?
One time I taught a class in junior high class, and I went before and stopped to talk about it. One of the young members in class, and there was been a problem in the previous class. And I took him by himself, and I talked to him, and told him I really needed his help in the class to keep it under control. Mm-hmm. And then during the semester, periodically, if he got a bit out of bed after class over, I'd take him and I said, now you remember you promised me to start this class that you were going to help control the class, that we can get out of control in here. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to worship tonight, so it will be better. And that curb a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's supposed to center
in
that one person.
That's right. Challenge them. Okay, very good.
But not embarrass them in front of me.
Yeah, that's right. That's the thing you don't want to do. We'll talk more about that, but that's what you don't want to do. One of the things you can do in smaller classes is just change where you teach class. Now, everybody knows that Doug is the problem student here. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We are all painfully aware of that. If I teach and he's the problem, and I move over here, and do I have to say a word to him?
No.
What does he know?
He knows that he's the problem.
He's on your island.
He knows. He knows that he's being observed. And so sometimes just moving around. Now, in adults, you don't do that as much, although I have taken advantage of the situation to walk back and stand by somebody that I thought needed to know that I knew, and wish they would quit what they were doing. But sometimes just moving around in the classroom. It's as simple as that. We do not have to sit behind a table or a desk to teach class. So sometimes movement will take care of the situation. Now, Doug, we don't expect any more trouble this evening. Now, you know, I think that there's a deception about the evening class.
Now you're back in your terms again.
But no baloney sandwich. Okay, do you understand preventative discipline? It's we have established some ground rules, and we're going to do everything that we can to avoid the infraction of those rules. Everybody knows what they are, and we've done what we can to make sure nobody crosses the line. Well, invariably, somebody will. So here comes remedial discipline. Now, I think this is where we go first. And it is not where we ought to go first. This is the last thing we do. This is action taken to correct a wrong relationship between the learner and the classroom organization. Now, I think that's an important definition, because it tells us at what point we do remedial discipline. What is the thing that we cannot tolerate in a classroom?
Disruption.
Okay. Say it again, I'm sorry.
Disruption.
Okay.
That's rather vague.
Yeah, it is, because I think there are some things that we can't really help that are going to be disruptions. Okay.
You're talking, we're talking about trying to do.
Okay. I think you're on the right page here. To me, it is when I cannot continue the teaching-learning situation. Now, there are things that I can tolerate which don't really influence that. In an adult class, you may have elderly people who are on medication, and they're going to go to sleep. You know what I do? Let them sleep. I'm not going to make a deal out of that. I'm not going to embarrass them. They're not keeping me from teaching, and they're not keeping anybody from learning. Now, if they start snoring, you know, that's another matter. We may have to do something there. But I think there are things that people do that might irritate me a little bit, but they really don't rise to the level where they keep me from teaching and the student from learning. If the situation does that, then we've got to stop. We've got to handle in some way that problem. Because keep in mind that what we're trying to do is have a well-planned teaching-learning situation. So if the behavior affects that negatively, then we've got to do something. All right? Well, that raises the question, what do we do? What will determine what we do? How egregious it is. Don't you love that word, egregious? Don't ask me to spell it, but I think it's a word. How egregious the problem is. Okay? What else?
Who it is.
All right. Explain that.
Well, for instance, say it's an elder Dickens child, you expect more out of them.
Okay.
Maybe a family that's visiting that's never been in a Sunday school setting before.
Okay. Now, while we have to be fair to everybody, we do recognize that there are some differences. We expect more of some people. Okay. What else determines it? The age of the child, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah, the age of the child is going to determine what we do. What do you think it's reasonable to do? Let's suppose Johnny, always the name of the problem kid, or
Doug.
He's in the fourth grade. And he has just absolutely torn up the class. You can't teach, nobody's learning. He's absolutely made a shambles of the teaching learning situation. What is reasonable for you to do?
Find the chair and gag him.
That's when you pulled out your duct tape. Duct tape's great. It's a teacher's friend. It is. All right. It may be that if he's a member, or his family's member, you may say he cannot stay in the class any longer. I would think if you can possibly get through the class, take care of that after class, if possible. Here's why. A child will hate you the rest of his life if you embarrass him in front of his peers.
Yep.
And if you can avoid that, now sometimes I don't think you can avoid it. But if you can avoid that, it's better. And I have always, and Mark, you said the same, you went to the person and talked to them privately. I have done that after class. I have beat a path to somebody and said, listen, you were just out of control tonight. And I'm sorry for that. You just absolutely ruined what we were trying to do in that class. And I can't tolerate that. Now, you can stop, and you can do better, or I can talk to your parents about it. Now, I've never had anybody say, yeah, go ahead. Generally, it's, oh, please don't do that. Okay, I won't say a word if you'll do better. But I will not let you ruin the class for everybody in the class. But you may have to remove that person from your class. You may have to take them to parents. What else might you do in an effort not to embarrass that child?
You mentioned a few weeks ago having teacher assistants in
yes.
the class, and whether that assistant is your kid's family member or not, sometimes it's another body to kind of
yes.
control that
yes.
one person.
And interestingly enough, I have asked parents of unruly children to be the second person in the classroom. I didn't tell them. And now the reason I'm asking you is because your kids are out of control. But if the kid is still out of control, I want the parents to see it. But generally speaking, that has a positive effect on the child. He doesn't want dad to take him home and wear him out because of the way he acted in Bible study. So I think that that can be a helpful thing, is a helper. Whether or not that helper is a relative of the child's. Absolutely. Don't you think that also might be a good place to reiterate the ground rules?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think it just dawned on me, we haven't gone over our ground rules for a while. Let's look at them right here, and let's get these in our mind, because of what we're trying to do, and we don't want anybody to keep us from accomplishing our goals in class. So it might be just a time to reiterate. If you go to talk to the parent, do you think that there is a way to do that that will probably gain that parent's help rather than make that parent react badly?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me what it is.
Intervention is a good thing if the child's doing
okay.
A good thing. However,
okay.
I'm having this problem.
All right.
Do that parent, how should I handle this situation?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's the key. I think when you go in and say, listen, your kid is a holy terror in class, and I don't know what to do, I'm about to pull my hair out.
Well, you've already put him on the defensive.
I have already put the parent on the defensive. Okay? None of us like to hear that about our kids, do we?
No.
Even if in our heart of hearts we know it's true, there's a part of us that says, that's my kid, and I'm not going to let you talk to my kid. You might say, I'm really glad to have your child in class. Can you help me know what I can do to help him respond in a good way? How do you handle things at home? And when we've done that, and I've done that, I've had parents be very cooperative, and generally they say, yeah, I know he can be a little problematic. I say, well, what do you do at home? Well, when I say we beat the tar out of him, I say, well, that's just not an alternative here. Well, we're not going to do that. But well, what do you think will help get a good response? I encourage you not to go and put the parent on the defensive the first thing. You're wanting to solicit the help of the parent in solving the problem. Okay? Questions over the three classes of discipline and what we've given as definitions.
One thing that you mentioned is, do you find most successful programs have assistants in class?
Yes.
They're not necessarily a substitute teacher, but just someone
no,
to help.
No, just an assistant. I think that especially in small classes where you may have to take a child to the bathroom, that it is not wise to leave the class to take that one, and it's not really wise to stay in the class and send that one. I think you need somebody else just for that. But I think that it is also another bit of constructive or preventative discipline when somebody else is around. It also, I think, opens that person up to the idea of teaching and classroom, and you may find that person would like to teach. Last weekend, I had a lady tell me, she said, I never wanted to even be in a classroom. I'm not sure why I came to this teacher's workshop. I don't think I could be a teacher. I'm going to volunteer to be a helper. And she would have told the preacher she'd like to help. And he was thrilled to death, and I thought, yay.
Speaking of, what to certain situations in the classroom, I've had situations in class before where students will make fun of each other, and that's not something I really want to wait until after class.
Okay, right.
Although, I you don't want to embarrass the child who's doing it, but in that situation, I feel like it's... So what would be your suggestion for a situation like that?
I would make one of the ground rules, we don't make fun of each other.
Right.
And just we say, look, now, let me say something. Remember our ground rules, look down there, number three. Number three is we don't make fun of each other. Because that hurts. I mean, depending on the age of the child is how you would explain that, but as a small child, I would say, that hurts. Nobody likes anybody to make fun of them. And so we're just not going to do that. We're just not going to allow that. And if you find yourself wanting to do that, now please don't, because we're just not going to allow it. But if I knew that was a propensity of one of the students or more, I'd certainly have that as one of my ground rules, and I'd hit that thing hard. Because I will tell you, children can be cruel. Now maybe they learn to be cruel from adults, But they can say things that just hurt others, especially those who are different in any way. Anybody? Yes.
I only made this statement, but in adult classes, and they talk about the past, but I think almost everybody's taught adult class, you have use of people in the class, either ones take over the class, or they make comments and they'll be relevant to what we're talking about. How have you dealt with that?
If somebody's trying to take over the class, I have two things that I do. I teach class of adults at church like I teach class here. I don't like lectures. I think it's the worst kind of teaching in the world. It puts all of the pressure for the success of the class on the shoulders of the lecturer, and unless he's really, 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 really good, it's just not a good way to teach. So I like questions and answers, and if somebody's trying to control the class, I will say, Mark, tell me what you think about this. I've shut JC out. He's the one who wants to talk all the time. And he's trying to take over the class, and I'm not going to allow him. I'm going to specify somebody else. And if he butts in, I say, let's let Mark answer. Okay? I haven't insulted him. I don't know whether he's gotten a point or not. You know, some people never get the point. I have also done the same thing that I do with moving around. If he's over on the right side of the auditorium, I just go over to the left side. I just, in effect, say, listen, buddy, you had your chance. I want to hear from somebody else. And so I may say, thanks for that. Anybody else got something to say? Well, when you say anybody else, what have you said to him, in effect? I'm done with you right now. Anybody else? And so I think you can say some things in a way not mean-spirited, but you cannot let somebody take over the class because they may have an agenda or they may just be enamored with their own thought process or voice, I don't know, and you want to involve everybody you can in the class. So those are the things I do.
In auditorium class, is it possible or is it important to try to get everybody together in a group of where they're all seated together? Can you be successful there?
There are dynamics in being close together. Now, I think you realize in this class we have a lot of discussion, right? Mm-hmm. And let's take this class into the auditorium. And let's let people sit about wherever they want to. I guarantee you that the participation level will go down. The closer you are together, the higher the participation rate goes. Now, I handle it in ways that everybody might not. We do on the ridge like you do at South Point. We just pin them to the back wall. Okay, yeah, okay. If they want to go in and sit behind me, that's fine. But I just put my little stool and my little stand right down there about half the way down the aisle, and I get on my perch, and when they come in, they pretty well know they need to sit in front of me, which means that between me and the wall there are a few pews, but not a lot, and that's where they're going to be. The other thing I have done, in the auditorium at Carnes was fan-shaped, or still is fan-shaped. And so I just said, to help with the dynamics of the class, I'm going to stand over here on this side. I invite everybody to join me. And I usually make some remark about, I wouldn't influence where you try to sit for anything in the world, but if you want to be a part of the class, it's going to be over here. And now there are a few who just, they'll show you they can do it, who sit over there. That's fine. But 98% of the people come over and be cooperative. And you have a much better class when you have them corralled, so to speak. I don't like adult classes for that reason. The church at 36th Street in Vienna, outside of Parkersburg, where Tommy Butterfield preached for so long. As a matter of fact, I'm going to see him Friday have a workshop in his congregation, Pursley. Have you ever been to Pursley?
I've been there, but I've never been to this
beautiful downtown Pursley. Yeah. Going to be there Friday night and Saturday. in a teacher's workshop. They built, when they built a new building, they built so that they didn't have to have an auditorium class. They put in some big classrooms throughout their building about the size of this for adults, and they don't meet in their auditorium. And I thought, boy, now that showed some real foresight and wisdom and planning. Yes?
I've attended churches that on Sunday night and Wednesday night, when they have a smaller crowd for their worship assembly, they'll move the podium halfway down the... It makes a lot of...
I do it. On Sunday morning, we have high church, in that I wear my suit and I go to the pulpit and, you know, the whole thing, because, you know, you're supposed to. Somewhere it says that. On the Sunday night, I don't wear a suit. I wear a tie. And I sit on my little perch about halfway down, and they love it. I think it is more intimate. I think it is closer. I think people feel better about being together. The singing is so much better. You can hear one another. And I even may ask a question in a sermon. You know, I just, do you understand that? Did you get that? What do you think about that? And it just, I think the dynamics are so much better. Now, I understand the size of the church, the congregation, influences some of that. Let's look on page 37 at the 5 D's that invite discipline problems. Some of these the teacher has control over, some of them the teacher doesn't have any control over. Disorder. Does the teacher have control over that?
Yeah,
basically. Does the teacher go in with a plan? Is the time filled? Does he or she know where he or she is going? Is there a plan to get where they're going? Discomfort. Do you realize something as simple as that can cause discipline problems? Too hot, too cold. Hard pews. Somebody not feeling well and just being uncomfortable. And you tend to fidget around. And I don't want somebody to be so comfortable they're going to go to sleep in the pew. But common sense says that we want some level of comfort. And when we're uncomfortable, we tend to get irritable, don't we? Don't you? Am I the only one? I suspect not. And so when you're uncomfortable, you get irritable, and that's when you say things you wish you hadn't said, and you tend to fidget and all kinds of things. Distractions. Are there going to be distractions? Tell me what distractions you would note that affect a class.
People coming in late.
Absolutely. Invariably. Invariably. And that is a distraction. I don't think those people understand it. It's a distraction in worship. It's a distraction in class. Because for a little bit, all eyes go to the person, and the teacher has lost connection. Okay, distraction. What else?
Well, a lot of times they come in and then they go out. And then they come in again.
Yes. Yes, I think some people must have surely the smallest bladders in the world. Because they run to the bathroom 18 times during the church services. What else? Distractions. Even in the auditorium, what are distractions? That some of them are pretty unavoidable. A baby?
Baby crying.
Yeah. A baby crying. Yeah.
Adults talking.
Yeah. Adults talking. Answering their cell phone at a funeral. Oh, I couldn't get over that one. It was just like, oh, no. She's not doing that, is she? Yes, she was. Disturbance. Now, I categorize disturbance as a major distraction. I have had some real disturbances. When a guy passes out and falls out into the floor, that is a disturbance. And I have had that happen. We called 911. We happened to have a doctor in the congregation. He went over and took care of the guy. The ambulance came, carted him away. Now that is a major disturbance. I have to tell you, I was teaching this class at the School of Preaching, and I was at this very point, and the fellow who was the dean of academics at that point, whose job I took later, opened the door and said, "You're giving a final on this class?" I said, well, what I'm really doing is talking about disturbances in class. The guys fell on the floor. Of course, he didn't get it, and I said, yes, I am, thank you. He said, okay, bye. Shut the door. And when he left, it was like, do I need a better illustration than that? I mean, he just absolutely blew the class coming in like that. That's why, for instance, if you've got somebody who counts, I suggest they don't open the door and say, how many got in here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, let me get that down here. I mean, that's just a disturbance. Write it down, put it outside the door on the wall, let somebody pick it up. You don't need to invite people in to disturb your class. I was thinking of the chair you were talking about. I've seen people go back on those and fall on the floor. That's a pretty major disturbance. I've had people get sick and throw up in class. That's a pretty good size disturbance. So there can be disturbances. Some of those you have no control over. Where you can control them, you need to. Disinterest. Now, do you have control over that or not? It could go either way, can't it? Yeah. It may be disinterest because you're not very interesting. It may be disinterest because the last thing in the world they want to be, or a place they want to be, is in Bible class on Sunday morning. But mom has said, you're going to go. Oh, I don't want to go. You're going to go. And so they're brought there by force, and they don't want to be there, and they're going to let you know they don't want to be there. But sometimes, guys, will we admit that sometimes our classes aren't very interesting? And we ask people to pay attention and participate in spite of us.
We think we're interesting.
I suppose. Did I tell you about the guy who reads the quarterly? Did I tell you that story?
That's what he did for a free class. He just read that.
He just read the quarterly. Now, I was not disrespectful. But it was just like, oh my goodness, I can read. Okay? Nobody said a word but him. He asked no questions. For 45 minutes, he read the workbook. If he thought he was interesting, he was badly mistaken. He was a good reader, that's all I could say for him.
That's bad.
Yeah. That would have really been an insult to injury. Yeah. That really would have been insult to injury. I think we have to go in with a plan, with a lesson. We have to try to be interesting. We have to engage students. And I think, for the most part, we will not have the discipline problems. Now, there may be some, and we have to handle them remedially. Is there a word like that? Must be. I just used it. Practical suggestions on discipline on page 38. We're about out of time. Be as positive as possible. I think if you face the class and you are negative and you say, I know we got some troublemakers in here and I'm not putting up with any of that, you've already established an atmosphere for the class that's not good. I remember when Brother Alley taught the high school class at Cerrito, and he had palsy. And I mean, he would just shake and his voice would just tremble. But the first Sunday he came down to our class, down the basement, way back in the corner behind the furnace, he said, boys and girls, I have looked forward to this for so long. I'm so excited about teaching you. I love all of you. I know your parents. You are a great tribute to them. You're going to be the future of this church. And we just all went, we just melted. We'd given other teachers fits, okay? But we couldn't. He was just so kind and so positive that we just loved him and respected him because we knew he cared for us, and that was genuine. That was not any way put on. I think we need to be as positive as possible in the classroom, and that will help with discipline problems. Keep rules to a minimum. However many you think handle the situation, a handful are about all you need. Make expectations clear. I know I thought she was pretty hard-nosed about it, but Sierra taught the cradle rule. And one of the things that she had was a Noah's Ark, which was made out of cloth, and you reached your hand inside the ark and pulled out the animals. And she would say, let's see what was on Noah's Ark. And she would pull out a giraffe, and she would say, do you know what this is? It's a giraffe. It was, there were two of them on Noah's Ark. And she would go through, and she would set them down. She had one of those little kidney-shaped tables. And now, even at Crater Roll, the expectation was you didn't get them and throw them. And you didn't say, mine, and I'm not giving it back, you know. If you did, Miss Sierra took them, put them back out, put them up on the shelf where everybody could see them. No, remember, we don't throw the animals. And we don't try to keep them from others who want to see them. Oh. Go see if she'd get it down later and say, she was teaching, we have rules, and it's pretty clear what happens if you don't keep them. Now, I'd have been an old softy, you know, but I think she was right in saying there are some things we have to teach. Do you have anything for parents who say, now I'm on my last nerve. This is the last time I'm going to tell you. Now, I mean, this is absolutely it. I'm not telling you one more time. And what does that child know? They know when they get to the point. For me, it was when my mother used all my names. I know I was in trouble. And so I think we need to say, here are the rules, and the expectations are clear. And you violate the rules that we have, then we'll have to deal with that. Allow students to experience the consequences of their actions. And we don't like that, do we? I told my boys growing up, I said, you get in trouble, they come and take you away to jail. I'm going to hate that you're there, but I'm not running down and getting you out of every scrape you get into. Because you know what kids grow up thinking?
Bail them out every time.
Yeah, every time. And then they get in one you can't bail them out of. I think sometimes you just have to experience the consequences. I remember when I tore the drive shaft out of a 48 Ford. And my dad said, you did it, fix it, or walk. Dad, you did it, showing off, fix it, or walk. And guess what? I learned how to put a drive shaft in a 48 Ford. Avoid double standards. Now, this was the only reason I asked you a while ago when you said something about the difference in students. And I understand we do expect more out of some. But we've got to be awfully careful about allowing some to get by with something that we will not allow others to get by with. I think we have to make sure that we are not seen as practicing a double standard where one can do this and another can't. You know, the cute little girls, we'll go a long way because she's so cute. Little curls. We've got to make sure that we're fair. Encourage mutual respect for everybody. Avoid put downs and nagging yourself. It's one thing to handle a problem. It's another thing just to nag and dwell on it and go over it and rub somebody's nose in it forever thereafter. I don't think that's fair. Get to know each student. One thing that I have found is when you get to know students, you learn often why they do the things they do in class. I have always recommended to teachers that you visit in the homes of your students sometime during the period when you teach. You will find out why one student runs through the door, grabs you and hugs you and wants to sit on your lap if you teach small children. And you may learn that that kid gets no attention at home and she craves some attention. You may learn that little Johnny acts the way he does because everything he does at home, his dad yells at him. And he's just put down all the time. A part of dealing with discipline problems is knowing why the person may be a discipline problem. And you learn that in their home, probably not in the classroom. Expect the best. And admit it when you're wrong. I've made lots of mistakes in classrooms, and I have learned, I wasn't always this way, but I've learned to say, hey, I blew it and I'm sorry. I've said to students, I was really tough on you. I was wrong, and I'm sorry. I think you're seen as a real person, and genuine, and that gains respect for you and does not diminish the respect that a student might have for you. Okay. There's another page you can read, the do's and don'ts of discipline. It's basically some things we've talked about. Questions or comments about discipline? All right. I will turn you over to Alan. He's in the building.